And welcome, henchmen, to another action-packed episode of the Deadly Podcast of Kung Fu, brought to you by the Villains Man, where myself, JVD, attempts to traverse the continuity of Marvel's most prolific martial artists in Iron Fist and Shang-Chi. If you want to keep up with the podcast, you can do so over on Twitter and Instagram by following at Deadly Kung Fu Pod. If you want to follow me, JVD, you can do so over on Twitter at JVD of TVD. Now, today, we are covering Iron Fist number 15, where he collides with Claremont's most popular book at the time, The Uncanny X-Men. But to handle such a great, big, massive fight, for a guy who helped me really start the volume of Iron Fist, the guy who's going to help me end the volume of Iron Fist, my close, one of my best friends in the world, Mr. Evan the Great. Welcome back to the podcast, good sir.
Hello. Yes, it's good to cover X-Men story in an Iron Fist book, so we should have a lot of fun with this one.
So, you were on issue one for Iron Fist when we jumped into the volume where he fought Iron Man, who is your, like, one of your favorite Marvel heroes, probably your favorite Marvel hero, and then now you're coming on when Iron Fist is going to come face-to-face with the X-Men. Probably, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, your favorite comic book team.
Oh, yeah, definitely. X-Men and my favorite comic book team. Always has been. I don't know how many podcasts we're on, like either ours or others, where they talk about X-Men and people just get popcorn because it might go on forever if I've never met the person we're podcasting with. But I've met you before, so we kind of know each other's comic histories, I guess you could say.
But that's the thing. No one knows your love of the X-Men on this podcast. They just learned of your love for Iron Man. So you want to give anybody a brief history of your love for the X-Men?
Yeah, it's just like, any other kid, well, we're not kids, but anybody our age probably grew up, as myself, watching the X-Men animated series.
On Fox, right?
It was Fun Fox. I watched it countless of times. And then as I got older in high school, I started reading comics, and most of them were X-Men comics handed down from my uncle. And then we started to get more into comics, just as my best friend through school, high school, college, all school actually. But when we got in high school is when I really started reading comics too. I used to just, read stuff like Batman and Spawn, different things Justin had. Then I would have all the old stuff my uncle gave me. Then I got to, started working, got my own job, and I started reading X-Men, and then I poured everything I had into all the X-Men storylines. It's just great. My favorite X-Men is Gambit, if you did not know. And I love the history of the X-Men because I've always thought it was intriguing to have everybody does it now, but back then nobody was doing what they was doing. You had a whole team of individuals who were trying to help people within the X-Men, and everybody was calling them the monsters. I thought that was really cool way to do stuff. And then you bring in the Brotherhood, and then you had, Professor X and, you had Professor X and Magneto going back and forth. And then you can introduce characters like the Juggernaut and all these different characters. It makes it really interesting. Some of the earlier issues, just while I'm on here, I work with a woman. It's going to be sad because I'm getting a promotion, by the way, and I will be leaving the store that I'm currently at. Don't tell you where I work, but been working there for a long time. But her husband passed away probably about 3 years after I started there, and this was like 17 years ago. And he had a bunch of comics, and she didn't know what to do with them.
I forgot all about this.
I don't know if you remember this story.
I forgot about
this. She and Carrie was in the back room, another friend of ours, Dr. Horton. And she heard us talking about the X-Men, and she said, "Damn, yeah, you're passionate about that." And I was like, "Yeah, I love comics. I love X-Men." I was like, tell her all the stuff I had, and at that time, I was really in. And she's like, "Well, my husband," which I didn't know he passed away at the time, and then eventually we find out he passed away. He's like, "She has all these X-Men books and stuff, and I don't know what to do with them, and I don't really want to sell them because I feel like that'd be bad. I wanted to give them somebody a good home." So she brought me these X-Men books, and there's a lot of the older ones, but they're all in bad shape. But I actually have X-Men issue 3. I like to talk about it because 75% of the cover is ripped off of it. And I looked through it, and I was like, I think this is like X-Men 3. And it was. So I actually have X-Men 3 that I read all the old stuff. And I have a lot of it.
Just given a lot of love.
It was. And it's so funny because, I mean, they had him. He had a bunch of comics, but I remember that one vividly because I was like, wow, there's three in here. To anybody else, it's worthless because it's all beat up. But to me, I'm like, this is awesome. So it's in my collection somewhere. And then from there, we start, you know, I start getting a better collection of it. And then eventually I buy a whole collection of all the Uncanny X-Men, X-Men all the way back to first appearance of Wendigo. I think it's like 140. I have all that stuff all the way through. And then of course a couple issues was picked through out of this big lot I bought of like 530 comics. And I did not have first appearance of Gambit. So Gambit is my favorite character. So that is the gift that JVD gave to me, a signed and autographed and Gambit issue, which is awesome. So I have that issue. And I've also
I want to back up there because I forgot that I took that to get signed for you because yeah. I just brought that up in issue in the last Iron Fist episode with Ryan from Across the Bifrost, which was a great episode because I was talking about how I walked into Cape Comic-Con that year was like, I'm going to get me an Avengers number one. And I had the two Walking Dead number ones that were signed and graded of one and two from Walking Dead. And I was like, and I had all that credit from Travis. And I was like, Evan, do you want anything? And he was like, first appearance of Gambit, you know, right there. We took it. And I totally forgot that in it was a World 2014, which was Sandra's bachelor party. And you couldn't make it because we had all these plans. And you're like, man, I'm not going to be able to go. And I was like, I took your book and got it signed by Claremont, and I forgot all about that. Got it graded for. I forgot all about it.
Yeah, it's the best gift, I've ever received because it was kind of like, I don't know how to explain it. It was something I wasn't going to be able to be present, but I got like a great gift out of it, and I've always kept it.
And it was also a pretty high grade too.
It was. It's a 9. I'll have to dig it back out.
It's a 4 or 6 for sure.
Yeah, I think it's 9.4. It might be 9.6, but I'll figure that out and let people know. But yeah, I got that signed and graded. And then when we were, I don't know where we was. Was it St. Louis Wizard World a different year? When I got the Remy cameo in a, what was it? A Fantastic Four.
Oh, that's in the, in an annual. That's in X-Men annual. Yeah, because it's got Ahab on the cover. We were
and it's funny. He's a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah, because you actually picked that up from Travis, too. Yep. And that was down, was that at Memphis Comic Expo? It's the expo in September we're talking about going to so we can meet Kevin Eastman.
Yeah,
it was down there. Yeah,
did I pick it up when we went there? And no, we went to Memphis. We met Claremont, and maybe that's when I picked up that one.
Was that at that one? No. This was before that show because stupid cheap, and like I think it was like in Travis's like dollar box, and now it's like a $40-$50 book. Yeah. So anyway, there's another way to tie Travis into from the last episode. There's another way to tie Travis into this. So,
but it was fun. Yeah, I got that Gambit, that gem. And then there was a time where I got on the New Mutants kick and X-Factor kick and all that stuff. So I have a whole bunch of first appearances of all those characters where we went through up back to Travis. Like he had a lot of these at the shop. Wound up getting all those, and then I got all those signed. Then we met Chris Claremont, which was a very it was an extraordinary time in our comic book careers, our comic book fan careers, I guess you could say.
Yeah, because
so we got all those.
Because that was the time you're mentioned is the second time, if you recall, we met Claremont down in Memphis because we had previously met him at St. Louis when we went up there with Sanders. Yeah.
He's a very interesting guy. I always, those who do not know are going to know now. Evan loves Chris Claremont's X-Men, all the stuff he did with it. I think it's fantastic. I love any of the Peter David, like X-Factor run with the X-Men. I call them X-Men too, because they're all under the same mutant title. I love all that stuff. I love anything that where you could really feel like it's not the superhero, it's the character behind the mask. And that's my, I guess that's the, my biggest love for the X-Men is this. It's like they could get hurt easier than like Captain America or Thor. But they're very powerful, but they have to almost train in their abilities. I love the ideal of the danger room. I love the ideal of these different chemistries you have, like with Wolverine when he enters. I definitely love any of the Storm-led X-Men teams, as anybody would know. Even her, when she ran them for the first time when they had their split and gold and blue. And then I like it later on when she has her at the head of the table again. And I think that was in 2014. But yeah, I've got a lot of X-Men stories, a lot of stuff. Anything from like 2014 or 15 back, I've probably read it. Some of the newer stuff I've read a little bit, but then I read heavily. And I just love reading about it. It was a great team book. I know JVD got more into X-Men with the Namor stuff, which was
I had dipped my toe into X-Men because of you and Sanders, because Sanders was a huge X-Men guy when I had met him. My a lot of my X-Men reading kind of really started when you started picking up Cable Deadpool. Yeah, because you were like, man, you've got to read this. And I was like, man, I hated the X-Men. I'm like, I don't want to read the X-Men because there's, which, you know, I love the X-Men from the X-Men cartoon, but mm-hmm. to read the comics. But, you know, a lot of my love is, you know, that Cable Deadpool book. And then, then I got really big into the X-Men right around the time of Utopia. So, and then, like, you was talking about how your story for your Gambit. I don't remember if you remember when we went to the last time we went to the Superman con together. I think last time I was there was 2018. And remember I'd found that the first appearance of Cosmic Ghost Rider back in Travis's back issues for like $1. And that was like a $100 book at the time. And I was like, hey, Travis, you know, this is like back here. And he said, well, if it was for $1, fair's fair. And I was like, are you sure? And he was like, no, man, fair is fair. Bring Travis back into this again. And because when the first time you met Claremont, which wasn't my first time when we went up in St. Louis, because remember he had me take his whole run of the Phoenix Saga up there and get it signed for mm-hmm. him. But because remember I took that book, and how I got my first appearance of Gambit is we went to the Superman con, and Scott from Berg's Comics was there.
Yep.
He's always trading with the guys at our local con circuit. And I said, Scott, you're my guy. I want to give you first dibs. Do you want this book? And he said, yes. And I was like, would you trade it for that first appearance of Gambit? And he said, yes. And then I traded it to him, and it worked out in my favor because the Gambit book's been hot for like the last couple of years because they were talking about the Channing Tatum movie, and now that Marvel and Disney own all the X-Men rights, you know, I worked out the better part of that deal there. And he gave me some other stuff on top of it because I was getting big back into the Valiant Rebirth stuff since they were Valiant mm-hmm. Entertainment. And I wound up getting like the first 0 through 10 for Ninjak. Exo Man of War, and I do believe Bloodshot. And he wound up trading me those for that first appearance of Cosmic Ghost Rider. So I think I worked out the better end of that deal in the long run. You kept saying Storm, the head of the, when she became the head of the table. Are you saying that Storm is your tribal chief?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's kind of funny you keep saying head of the table because there is a part in this story involving the head of the table and Storm yeah. in this book that we'll get to later.
Storm's so. Just, if I talked about each character, it would be 10 hours. I could do a solo character thing on these characters. That's how much I love the X-Men from that time period all the way through. But Storm is definitely, I like Nightcrawler, Iceman, Gambit. Gambit's my favorite, but I like Storm a lot. She's very, well, Storm very and powerful.
Nightcrawler are like two of our top five X-Men individually amongst us, and they're both in this book, which is a reason I really want to jump on this episode.
I think they understand. They have the best control over their powers. Like, because their powers can be devastating. to people. I mean, other people, they can do stuff like Claws of Wolverine and Cyclops Blast, but Nightcrawler can literally, like, he can make a mistake. If he might not be able to save somebody. He can go somewhere he don't want to go on accident. Like, he has to really harness that in. Plus, he's not only known as a mutant, he's known, in the first appearances and stuff, as a demon, basically. So,
yeah.
And Nightcrawler's got a very interesting history. If you guys do not know, y'all should look it up. He's actually pitched to DC Comics first. So, mm-hmm. Y'all should look that story up.
It was, yeah.
Storm is a success story. If you do not know her backstory, you should look it up to see where she came from and where she is now.
That's very true. Now, before we get to the book, you mentioned, your promotion and whatnot. I just want to throw this out there is because here with all the Villains of Man podcast stuff we've always done, me, you've always been like, life always comes first, podcast second, or even third, fourth, however it falls. And because you've got this promotion, and I cut it actually out of the Marvel 2-in-1-29 episode because we finally decided, hey, you're going to be able to make this episode, is we're putting Crossover Collision back on hiatus. We can't help that. Obviously the promotion Evan could not pass up, and I was like, and he's like, hey man, we need to put this back on hiatus, and we were just coming back, and it kind of sucks, man, because it's like almost we never missed a beat. All the downloads and the followers are there. Like, I was like, I remember we did our first episode on the comeback, which was Kang and Reverse Flash. I was like, dude, look, it's like we never left, and it'd been over a year.
I'll never say it dies, because I love doing it. And it's just like every time we get on a roll, it ain't like a bad curveball. It's a good life curveball, but it has me have to, like, this stuff happens. And we like, so maybe one day, maybe when we're older and we have a bunch of crap already took care of, which just never happens in life, we can just be like, hey, we're going to do this for now. So
I like how you say when we're old, like we're not, like you act like we're in our early 20s again.
Yeah, that's why you got to pretend that as long as you can.
So, but hey, man, I'm totally happy for you. Deserve this promotion. It's a long time coming, so I'm extremely happy. But hey, like, Crossover Collision's over. But if you want to hear Evan the Great all the time with me and our other friends, all you gotta do is subscribe to The Last Tavern on the Left. By the time this episode drops, our Where Death Dwells campaign is almost over. I will tell you, the audio's rough, but the storytelling and the role playing is great. And then after that, the audio is going to get better because we're going to be releasing all the stuff we started in 2022 with my Resident Evil campaign, Joe's Star Wars campaign. So a lot of good storytelling. And if you want more of him, great. You don't have to listen to Crossover Collision. You go listen to our Last Tavern on the Left podcast where we play tabletop RPGs.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Open mic.
Open. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Totally different type of podcast today, because the humor, the crude adult humor is there. And you don't get that on this podcast. Because when we get with Joe and Kyle, boy, it turns into like South Park real fast. It turns into some old school Comedy Central. But anyways, let's move on and let's dive here into Iron Fist 15. This issue dropped on May 31st, 1977, and 9 other Marvel comics dropped with it, which was Marvel Treasury Edition number 15, Savage Sword of Conan 21, Godzilla number 2. If you want to hear about my story with that comic book series, go listen to the previous Iron Fist episode. The Human Fly number 1, Invaders number 20, Marvel Super Action Volume 2 number 3, Marvel Superheroes 66, Marvel 2-in-1 31, and The Tomb of Dracula number 60. The title for this book is called Enter the X-Men, and the creative team for this is writer Chris Claremont, penciler John Byrne, inks are Dan Green, colorist is Bruce Patterson, the letterer is Annette Kowicki, and the editor, as always, for this and most of the Master of Kung Fu series, which goes along with this podcast, is Archie Goodwin. The cover for this book is done by Dave Cockrum and Irv Watanabe. This book tells you all you need to know what you're going to get in this issue. I love this cover. What do you think about this cover?
The cover is amazing. It showcases it just showcases everything. Well, the readers, the listeners are definitely going to want to look at this cover. It shows the X-Men trying to work in tandem against an unknown ally / we'll get into it later, / enemy. But the color, if you just look at the cover itself, it shows a lot of things. X-Men, they get more, and I say this because I think it's true. The X-Men almost they work better as a team when they start to lose. I don't know how to explain that any better. I think it's because you kind of see it in this cover that they're like, what's going on? And then they kind of like picking it up. It's really, really interesting how the art work for that kind of cover. And especially this cover is just genius cover.
Yeah. Well, what's good about a lot of this series is, you know, a lot of modern day comics, you see a cover and the cover is very misleading to what goes on in the book. Not with this volume of Iron Fist. It's pretty spot on.
Yeah, it's spot on.
So, but what you get is in the foreground, we have Nightcrawler on his belly. Looks like he's been hit. And above him, Iron Fist is plowing into Colossus and sends him flying. In the background, we have Wolverine. Kudos to him keeping the suit that's in this book and not what he's typically wearing in the X-Men. I'll get into that later. And then the classic Storm suit. And they're looking at him like, what is going on, you know? Which the Wolverine having the look of what's going on does not fit what's going on in this book. So, but let's go ahead and dive into the issue. So the issue opens up with a splash page with Enter the X-Men on the top as Danny is taking out some hired goons who have stolen a Rand Meacham truck that is apparently valuable to the company. And it's just kind of, we know that there's some stuff going on with the company and someone is like trying to almost hijack their stuff from the last issue. And this is the tip off that Iron Fist has got that's kind of stopped this hijack from happening. I don't know when you read this issue, but I have not read this issue in a while, and I just read it for the first time in a long time yesterday. And if you do not pay attention, it's very hard to tell that there is a guy with a machine gun, and the gun is coming out of the corner of the left-hand page because it's all silhouetted. And it's actually hidden real well because when you first open this page, the first thing you see is Iron Fist in the middle of the page punching and kicking a guy. And that gun is hid really well. Did that catch you off guard? Did you notice that as soon as you opened the page?
You know, I kind of did not notice that until after I really started looking over the page, you know, reading it, and I'm like, that's a gun there. Yeah. Very, and he's drawn in a very, like you said, a silhouette, like a perfect posture for a martial arts kick with a punch.
It's John Byrne. The dude's a legend. But when you move on to the next page, he dodges because he sees the guy with the gun, and the guy's like, what? I missed, and he sprays the van. And Iron Fist does something that I feel that is very Ninja Turtle, and grabs a manhole and throws it as a frisbee to take this dude out. He's talking about how, you know, it's silent as a grave now that he's taken these guys out. And he's been distracted here since everything's happened with Misty Knight back in issue 13. And lo and behold, just like the last issue, he gets jumped from behind by a guy dressed just like him. Now, my problem here is he gets kicked from behind. He doesn't sense Davos coming up behind him. And his inner monologue says lightning kick from behind, but I didn't even sense it coming. How does he know it's a lightning kick if he doesn't sense it coming?
That is a very interesting. I didn't think about that. On the next panel, we get some more Davos, you know, kind of, you know, letting Iron Fist know what's going on. And then Iron Fist knowing, fighting back. Which is more these, I just like in these older, even in the newer stuff, but the older stuff especially, they draw it with fluid on all strikes, punches, kicks, headbutts. It's almost like they do that to show you the power level that they're coming with, which you get to see that a lot in the upper right panel here, which is really cool. Then you get to see kind of like as he's trying to get Iron Fist power, and he gets him in a bear hug, which is kind of funny because a classic bear hug like this, if you remember correctly, especially any wrestling fans, the way you get out of that is like clap the ears. And I thought that's what we would see, but we do not. He actually drops Iron Fist, which shows you of what's going on at the time period. But it's very interesting, and I really like it.
I want to bring something up here. The panel where he's got him in the bear hug is very reminiscent from the last issue. I mean, almost identical. Like, and I brought this up with the episode with Ryan, is anytime we're seeing a transfer of energy involving the chi, The character that is locked up with Iron Fist is always yellow, and you get all this like crackling, like Kirby art around them that is red. We see that with Radon in issue 4. We seen it last issue when Davos did his same ambush, and we're seeing it here. And what I like about this issue, and we really didn't get this in 14, is when he absorbs the chi from Iron Fist and Davos drops him, Davos' serpent glows red and it's smoldering, and the smoldering is like leaping off of where Iron Fist's dragon is on his chest. Like the connection is fading away. I really like how Byrne draws that. I think that's really good depiction of him stealing the energy and almost siphoning off completely.
I agree with that. And I didn't notice that when I was kind of going over it again, how the thimble is drawing off of it. And it's almost like a signature villain move because everything else is dark except for the glowing symbol. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. And we get a lot more, we get a better idea of the colors of Davos's uniform, because in 14, we don't really see everything. He's pretty silhouetted. We just get an idea that his suit pretty much kind of looks like Iron Fist. But in this, we don't realize that his pants are actually blue. His part of his sash is green and his mask is green. So we're really getting an idea of teasing us what the character looks like. But in the next panel, we're going back into the city, and it's evening moves on, and the shift of our scene uptown from the Battery of Greenwich Village to a quiet street side just off Washington Square. And we're starting to get the introduction of the X-Men as we're seeing that Wolverine is watching the apartment of Jean Grey. And I really love Claremont really does a good job of interweaving his X-Men story into this Iron Fist story, because we know at the time Wolverine has just been introduced to the X-Men in the last 10 some odd issues. And he lights a cigarette, which is very unlike what we know from Wolverine today, because he's a cigar guy. And I love how he does the classic like stalker trope of like, I'm going to rip the guy out of the photo of the chick that I'm madly obsessed with. I love that. It is so stalkerish. And he actually is broke away from his contemplation of obsessing over Jeannie and his hatred of Scott to notice that Iron Fist gets inside of their apartment, because we know now from X-Men 102 and Iron Fist number 11 that Jean Grey and Misty Knight share an apartment. And Wolverine's going to go take on this guy sneaking in the apartment, which we know is Iron Fist.
Yeah, this whole page here is just wonderful. Talking about, they always call him like kind of like the loner. Right off the bat, when he's like gets that tree and it's all shaded out, I'm like, yeah, this dude's a loner.
Yeah, he's a stalker.
Yeah, well, stalker, but yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah, stuff. I agree with everything you said, man. And then I don't know if you noticed this, but it's something we noticed when we read our older issues, because this is in the late 70s, right?
Yeah, 77.
Wolverine's claws have changed so much since his introduction.
Yeah. Yeah, back then they were almost like spines. Like they were like curved. They were always curved. They were rounded and they were sharp. They're not a blade like we come to know later on when Claremont starts with the like Marvel Presents and the Wolverine books and the X-Men books. Like they're more bladed. No, they're more like talons. And they were like that in his introduction into the Incredible Hulk. They were the same way. So the story moves on to an interlude at Cutlass Bay, where we see Misty Knight looking smoking hot, coming out of the water on the beach to towel up. And then it flashes back to where she has taken this job. And the DA's office has asked her to infiltrate Bushman's operations down in the Caribbean. We've seen this in issue 13, where Misty and Danny has come divided, because we know there's emotion between them, like they're falling for each other. And because Danny has been torn between her and Alan Cavanaugh, who's a former IRA bomber, and we know that Misty has lost her arm to a bomb, she's kind of like split between them too, because he's friends with both of them. And he's like, well, if you can't see that he's changed, then we don't need to be friends. So she decides to take up this mission, which is very dangerous, to this mobster, Bushman. And this is Bushmaster. I keep calling him Bushman. This is Bushmaster. That's the problem with Marvel. We have Bushman, and we have Bushmaster. Bushman isn't like, you know, Captain America, Wolverine villain. This is Bushmaster. And so I apologize for that. And this is his first appearance. And they're telling her, as we're flashing back to the present before all this, like, how dangerous this mission is. And she's like, no, I willingly accept this mission, as they're trying to talk her out of it. And they give her a cover. And we see that she has gotten so far into Bushman's operations that they're romantically involved. And it makes you question how far Misty will go on another undercover mission. If she's like, she kisses him, and you could tell that she's regretting it. Bushman shows up, and he's like, Bushman, damn it, Bushmaster. I'm going to have to really work on that here, because he's going to be around for a little while. He says, Maya, my dear, which is Maya's Misty's undercover name, says, surprised to see me. The conference in the port hardcore ended early, and I'm motored back here to spend the evening with you. And she's caught off surprise. And he just kisses her real deeply, and she's like, oh, God. I'm not only inside Bushman's organization, he might be inside her for all we know. I'm closer to him than any living human being, but at what cost? And that's what I'm getting at. Like, we don't know how deep she is with him, because we see the tear in her eye, because we know she has feelings for Danny, but that could be fear also. Like, how far am I do I have to take this to exploit this mobster? And it leaves you with the question.
I kind of think, you know, these two panels going over what you're discussing is she is doing this to almost make herself appear to be very under him, beneath him. That way, if when opportunity strikes, he would not expect what she can do.
And that's a good thing to bring up, because Misty Knight is a very strong female character in the series. Mm-hmm. She gives no shits, and she'll fight anybody. She has no fear. And maybe that fear that I just mentioned is like, how far am I going to have to degrade myself to get what the DA's office needs against this madman, this mobster? So you bring up a really interesting point there.
Yeah, that's very interesting. On our next panel, we go back to the apartment of Gene and Misty, and we see Iron Fist, which Evan loves this. He's going by. There's all these food platters, and he's just tasting stuff, trying to find out what's going on. I think that's very hilarious. And then, boom, straight out of the window, here comes Wolverine. And what I must say, I'm so glad they changed him up a lot. It's so funny looking at it like this. But it made sense for the time period.
I want to bring a note because of his suit. Wolverine, like, people have talked about this costume, and it's a very short-lived. This is Fang from the Shi'ar Empire suit, and because they have just recently encountered the Shi'ar, the X-Men have, and in this story, this is the only time he wears this costume after he stole it in X-Men 108. But the thing is, like, when you first meet X-23, this is kind of the costume she's wearing.
That's kind of funny. I like that.
But this Another whole page, this whole page is funny. I just want to read what Iron Fist says here, because there's a party apparently going on. He sticks his fingers, two fingers, which is kind of dirty when you think about it. He sticks two fingers in the potato salad, and he's like, I wonder what this is. Potatoes, eggs, celery, spices, mayonnaise. It tastes good. I'll have to ask Colleen Wing about it. So he's been back on Earth for a couple years now, and he does not know what potato salad is. Surely as a kid, he knows what potato salid is. Because we live in Southeast Missouri. Everybody knows what potato salad is.
Yes. It's so great how he says those ingredients. So he tastes it, and then he says everything is in it and don't know what it is. I think it's hilarious.
It's hilarious. But continue on.
Yeah, so you got him doing this. You got Wolverine busting through, like we stated. In a very attacking manner. Oh, yeah, definitely. Savage. In the classic bub, because that's what Wolverine always says. He says, freeze, bub. He comes through, calls him a trespasser, and you know it's about to go down. So, of course, Iron Fist at the time period and any time period is a much greater martial artist. And he hits Wolverine with an uppercut. I like how he draws the hand as it's turned going back. It's almost like a palm strike uppercut. which is very interesting, very reminiscent of an Iron Fist type shot. Yeah, so then you got Wolverine kind of shaking it off in the face that Wolverine's making after he hits him with this and he's on the ground. It looks like he literally knocked Wolverine silly. And he's getting up and acting like it wasn't, you know, nothing going on. He slices.
What it really is Wolverine's like, hell yeah, I'm in for a fight. Like, he's excited.
That's exactly what he starts to say right here.
Yeah, because think about it. He's all riled up because of Scott Summers. And because he just ripped that picture up. And he's like, fucking Scott Summers, I hate that prick. Because we all think Scott Summers is a prick. And now he's like, sweet, I get to take my aggression out on somebody who can actually fight.
Another thing I think is very hilarious in these panels, as they fight through her apartment building, by the way, is Iron Fist knows that Misty Knight lives here, and Wolverine knows that Jean Grey lives here. And guess what they have no cares about? Any furniture that they tear up, because they just tear this couch to pieces.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny. Well, Wolverine's probably thinking, you know what? Jean's probably been reamed out by Scott on this couch a million times. This couch, you know? He's probably can smell it.
And also, somebody needs to cosplay as this Wolverine at a con, and they better win first place, because I think it'd be hilarious. So, they start fighting. They tear this couch to the living, you know what. And then he punches Wolverine. He flies through a lamp. And then he does it goes to the next page. And this is kind of where, I guess, Iron Fist is kind of questioning himself, I guess you could say.
Yeah, this is where the last issue and the thing with Davos comes into play hardcore, because Davos is ciphering off the Chi of Shaolau from him, and he cannot summon the Iron Fist because he was already having a hard time against Sabretooth trying to summon it. And even right here, like, to read his inner monologue here from the top of the page, he says, "My skills alone won't save me from those calls forever, especially as I'm still drained, weak from that ambush. I have no choice but to use the Iron Fist." And he's trying to summon it, and he's so surprised, and he's like, "Heart of the Dragon, I focused all my will, my chi, called the power of the Iron Fist, but nothing happened." So we're really starting to see this subplot of Davos really starting to affect him as a fighter.
And that shows you, on top of that, how powerful he is. He don't even have chi. He fight Wolverine.
Sabretooth, yeah. Like, and I like you brought that up. Something we've always said on Crossover Collision every time we talk about Wolverine, because everybody talks about how he's a master hand-to-hand fighter. No, he's really not. He's a straight-up hack-and-slash brawler. And guys who are far more skilled than him, like Iron Fist, usually whoop his ass.
Because, like, everything he's trying here, this is not very long into Wolverine's comic book career. Like, Iron Fist blocks the two claw strikes, which is a classic karate move. I don't know if you've ever seen people do that. And then he goes straight in and grabs the collar and throws him backwards, basically in a suplex form across the couch again, which I never noticed. This is also hilarious until just now, because I knew they tore up one couch. He throws him over this couch, and there's no way that's the same couch, because it looks like it had not been
cut. I did not notice that at all. I do want to bring up here with the throw, because we were just talking about Sabretooth, and me and Ryan had talked about this for issue 14. He says, "Here comes Wolverine. Doesn't the man ever get tired? His sheer animal ferocity reminds me of Sabretooth. Could there be a connection?" And we talked about this in the last episode. Like, I asked Ryan, like, do you think he's setting up the connection between these two? And he's like, oh yeah, he has to be, you know, because we see Sabretooth, his first appearance, he's calling Iron Fist Bub, you know. And I even went back, because, like, who said Bub first? Which Wolverine says it almost as soon as he joins the X-Men, and he says Bub. So, you know, clearly Claremont is using these two issues of Iron Fist to form a connection with Wolverine and Sabretooth, because Colleen Wing in issue 14 mentions, like, "I know who you are, Sabretooth, by name. You know, you're a freebooter, you're a pirate." And we already know that she's establishing that Sabretooth has been around for a while. And even through Iron Fist's inner monologue here, he's even establishing that these two are possibly connected, which we do know later on, come the Mutant Marauder book, that Wolverine and Sabretooth have their first comic fight in you know, like in the history of Marvel Comics, but we know that their continuity goes much farther back.
Yeah, very, very, very good stuff. I like the connection that they made here. Also, you could see, like, whenever you're looking at this stuff, this is all earlier stuff, and it's stuff that's still really cool because Iron Fist notices that the he has claws, but Sabretooth has the finger claws, you know, and yeah, he's starting to notice. Nails. And they got that same kind of hair, savage animal-like hair and beard styles. Mm-hmm. And he's noticing this, which is very interesting. And this costume Wolverine's wearing is very reminiscent of Sabretooth's costume. It the way the fur is. Yeah.
maybe
the bones around his neck and everything. He probably thought this is somebody from his clan.
Well, it's kind of funny you brought that up. You just made me realize this, and I didn't think about looking at any of the history about it. But maybe Claremont purposely left him in Fang's costume to make that connection more real in this book.
Yeah. I wonder if he did.
It makes sense.
Luke Claremont is a genius when it comes to that.
But as this fight wraps up and you talk about how he throws him over the couch, I didn't even think about how that couch was perfectly intact after they just fought across it. And he throws Wolverine through the window, which is five stories up, and he's like, oh my God, I've killed him. During this entire brawl, they never touch the whole table of food.
They do not.
So it's kind of funny.
And also, if you watch this throw where he kicks him and throws him through the window, Iron Fist does not have any chi, and he threw him that hard. And when you look at that left panel where he's flying out, you have to throw somebody really hard to make their body contort like that. That shows you that he knows how to use his full martial art potential to the fullest.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, at this time, we don't really know, but there's 400 pounds of adamantium in Wolverine.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. And it's for him to throw him that
far. Iron Fist's got to be superhuman.
Yeah, he kind of is. But with this nice brawl between Wolverine and Iron Fist, we're going to go ahead and we're going to take a break before we dive into the rest of the X-Men crashing the party, because this literally is what's going to happen. But we're going to go ahead and take a break. We're going to play you a podcast from me and Evan the Great's podcasting friends. And when we get back, we're going to dive into the rest of this brawl in Iron Fist number 15.
What's up, nerds? I'm Rich.
And I'm Diesel.
From the Three Fat Nerds podcast. And we invite you to go and check out our podcast anywhere you get podcasts by searching Three Fat Nerds. Diesel, what do we talk about?
We talk about all things pop culture and nerdom.
And then later in the week, we come up with a podcast that's all about wrestling. But you can watch that wrestling show live every week on twitch.tv/607podcast, Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Diesel, how else can the people chat with us?
They can just go on Facebook and type in that search bar, Three Fat Nerds Podcast, and find our page.
You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at Three Fat Nerds Pod.
We're also on 8122productions.com for all information to how to find us and get in contact with us.
With that being said, we've only got one thing left to say, and that's later, nerds!
Later, nerds!
And welcome back, Kinchman, to this action-packed episode of Deadly Podcast Kung Fu. Myself, JVD, and my very close friend, one of the players over on the Last Haven on the Left podcast, Evan the Great. How are you enjoying this book so far?
This book is fantastic. It shows you it's awesome. The Wolverine part in that, it just picks up so well inside there. Because there's nothing given. Like, he sees what's going on. He's like, I'm killing this guy. And then he's like, who's this guy in here? I'm killing this guy. And it's about to get worse.
We're also joined by another special guest, my cat, Handsome Chandler, who is thirsty for attention right now. So if you hear him banging around on stuff, I do apologize. He might get feisty and yell at me. But let's go ahead and continue on this book. The book picks back up as we see outside that Colossus in his human form, I shouldn't say human because he's a mutant, in his basically normal form, is walking with Nightcrawler down the street, and they're discussing about how Nightcrawler will never wear his image-inducing mask again. He's always going to, you know, look like his mutant self. I love in this first panel how in the background someone is pointing at Nightcrawler, and you brought that up earlier before we started talking about the comic. Like, oh my god, look at this dude, and then two people behind that guy are running away. I love that. But they automatically notice that Wolverine is getting thrown out of the window, and Colossus isn't fast enough to catch him, and Nightcrawler bamps over there. I love how they depict Nightcrawler's bamfing in this book. How it's the bamf, and we get motion lines to show you what direction he's going towards. I love that, and it's hilarious how when Colossus takes on his organic steel form, how it just rips the clothes off of him, and his X-Men uniform is underneath it. Like, it makes no sense at all. Like, almost like his transformation materializes his uniform on him. And after they catch Wolverine, he's like, what's going on? And he says, some dude, burglar, I think, tried to kill me in Jeannie's place. And then Colossus runs up after Nightcrawler catches Wolverine. And that says something about Nightcrawler. He catches a man with 400 pounds of adamantium that just fell five stories. Easily.
Yeah.
That's kind of wild. But Wolverine tells him, and this is funny, he blames the whole thing on Iron Fist. He says, some dude, burglar, I think, he questions it, tried to kill me in Jeannie's place. Look, Colossus, I got no time for details. Just toss me back up here. He kind of gives him the fastball special. But I like how he says, some dude tried to kill me. Yeah. Wolverine come after him. Iron Fist was just fingering potato salad and trying to eat it, you know. Oh, I love that. And then Nightcrawler bamps up there as Colossus runs into the stairs. And as soon as Wolverine's up there, he's trying to kill Iron Fist again after saying that he was trying to kill him. I love it. He says, heads up, bub, Wolverine coming at you. And then Nightcrawler, I love how Nightcrawler's drawn here. As you can, the only color on Nightcrawler is his hand sticking out of the brimstone smoke, and just his eyes are colored, and the rest of his body silhouette. I love that. Iron Fist doesn't even pay attention to Wolverine. First thing he does is just sock Nightcrawler right in the face, grabs Wolverine and throws him down. And then here comes Colossus running up the stairs. Iron Fist finally summons his chi. This is just chaos at this point. And Iron Fist says, things are getting out of hand. He says, they're coming out of the woodwork. Concentrate, young dragon. It's now or never. Only your Iron Fist can hope to stop the Man of Steel. So a little kind of Superman reference there. And then he smashes Colossus. He's like, an instant later, we see him go flying back through the door he just ran out of and collides into the wall. And I think this is cool. Even weakened chi is enough to send Colossus, who's a 100-ton character who fights the Juggernaut, flying. I love that about how they're impressive. Claremont is making Iron Fist in this fight.
You got to think the whole time in this panel, he's got Wolverine slicing at him wearing a suit with bones all over it, and he has a demon show up in an apartment building.
Yeah,
and then a robot.
So one thing
to notice in the middle panel, look at the wrist lock that he has on Wolverine when he tosses him over. That is a legit two-toe grab that you see a lot of people do.
That is awesome.
Then we go into our next panel.
The next funniest page. Part of the story.
And basically Storm shows up and he's like, well, actually, the writer, you know, he writes a little comment in there. Now it's time to shift the scene again to the sky above the village. All Storm is flying, and she's noticing what's going on, and she's talking about how it feels so good, and her fun is about to be over.
Oh my god, this is awful.
As she lands on top of the building, and then all of a sudden she opens the door to see chaos. She opens Jean's apartment door, and it's hard to say because this is funny because what we said earlier. So Iron Fist punches Colossus on top of the dinner table.
that breaks. Has not been touched this entire time.
And launches, if you look at this, all the food falls to the ground, but it launches the potato salad, flies straight through the room, hit Storm square in the face. So not only did Iron Fist go over there and start, you know, doing his thing, they decided to throw the salad right in her face. I was like, oh my God.
And this is what's awesome is like, Storm shows up, she changes the molecules of her uniform to look super sexy, right? And as soon as she walks in, like, I love this, like, the potato salad, panel to panel, there's three panels as it hits her in the face, and I love it's got that splurch. The bottom panel is classic. They all look up, and they're all got this oh shit look on their face, and Nightcrawler is like, "Men God, we're in for it now, I think." Because they know they just pissed off the wrong person. I love
it. They need this on a poster. That bottom panel, they need that on a poster because that is hilarious what you're describing there.
Yeah, it is. And then to make things worse as this is going on, more X-Men are showing up. Moria McTaggart, McTarget, however you want to pronounce her name, the chick who's fucking up all the Hickman stuff that's been going on with Krakoa, her and Banshee are now coming to the party. And they see Storm's anger because they're seeing lightning a block away. And they're like, oh, my God, who is pissed off Storm? Because I know that Storm's going to this party at Jean Grey and Mystique Knight's apartment. And they're like, oh, shit, we've got to hurry up and get there. And then this is at the apartment. Iron Fist is actually trying to get away from the X-Men. I apologize if you hear my son. He just got up from his nap. And Nightcrawler is just wailing on him. And I think it's funny that as soon as this happens, he's timing Nightcrawler's attacks, punches him. And just when he thinks, okay, I can get away again, here comes Banshee flying in and snatches him up and screaming at him. And then Iron Fist is like, literally, he's like, it's another one hitting me from the air. I can't escape. Like, he cannot get away from the X-Men at all. Like, they're literally ganging up on him at this point.
It's so funny. So funny.
And then on the next page, Moria starts to come up the stairs. And she's like, oh my God, what is going on? And this is funny because she makes a reference here. She says, oh, dear, we had the devil's own time calming down Jean's landlord when Fire Lord attacked her place. If this door is any indication of the damage, he'll evict her this time for sure. So I went back and, you know, read X-Men 105. And what happens, what she's referencing is Jean and Misty Knight have Jean Grey's parents and Professor X over for dinner. And Liliandra is trying to escape from Shi'ar space from her brother. Oh, and she gets teleported in, right? Well, at this time, Eric the Red has manipulated the X-Men. Well, he's manipulated Fire Lord into attacking the X-Men. And he blows up an entire wall of this apartment. And he's like, hear me, humans, I'm Fire Lord. I have come for the Princess Ilandra and the X-Men called Charles Xavier. Resist me at your peril. Jean Grey's like, oh my God, you just pissed me off. She turns into the Phoenix and blasts him through another wall of this apartment. So Moria already knows, like, okay, this apartment's almost already been destroyed once, and now it's being destroyed again. So it just kind of shows you how much damage this building has taken in a couple of weeks between fights with the X-Men.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
And when you look at some of the, when she first turns, the way that they draw their faces of surprise in this comic is hilarious. When she's going up the stairs, they do a really good job of showing expression on, oh my God.
Yeah, because she's like, what's happening here? And at this time, Iron Fist literally leaps up, gets a leg lock on Banshee's head with his legs and flips him over, and they come crashing back on top of the apartment, and he finishes him off with a punch. And this is where Storm's like, no, you just, well, okay, here's even even wilder question. And so Storm's like, wrong, villain, you've attacked my friends, attack me, and for that Storm will make you pay. How'd she get the potato salad cleanly off her face,
dude? She got power of wind.
But to make it that clear, like, it would still be
in rain. In rain.
Okay, that's a good point, because we did see the storm. That is a very, very, very good point.
And that is my favorite Storm look. I like the way the golden black cape and all that. I think it's
I love the classic look. Well, she summons up a whirlwind and throws Iron Fist back into the apartment at Colossus, who grabs him. And I love how Wolverine finally acts like this is all Iron Fist's fault.
Yes.
He should have never attacked him. Colossus has him because Wolverine's still blaming him for this. And Colossus says, he will not escape us again. And Iron Fist says, I don't intend to try. Listen, there's been a mistake. We need to talk. Wolverine, because this is clearly all his fault, says, ha. And he rips through Iron Fist's mask with two claws on each side of the nose. He says, Wolverine, don't talk, bub. He acts. Yeah, we've caught that towards the end of the book. We realize you don't talk to anybody. When Iron Fist was trying to talk to you in the beginning, you get my drift. And this is where Jean comes off, and she hits them with this psychic blast to end the fight. And then we see Jean in all her Phoenix glory, and she said, because Wolverine's wondering what happened, she's like, I did. And in case you've forgotten, my small but volatile friend, the name's Phoenix. This is my apartment. She's just all in flames. I like how Jean, like Scott's like wondering what's going on because he's so confused. He's got a bag of groceries. It's like, we just went out to get more munchies. What the hell's going on? Wolverine, he's like, butt out, Summers. This is all Scott's fault as well because, you know, he ripped him from the picture. He's like, look, Jeannie, I found this burglar here. And he's like, you're crazy, Wolverine. He's no burglar. He's my roommate, Misty Knight's best friend. And Iron Fist slaps himself in the face like, holy crap. And his inner monologue here, it's funny. He's like, Lord of Light, does everybody know my real identity? And you automatically have to assume, like, Misty's like, girl, I've got this crush on Danny, and he's Iron Fist, but no one has to know that. And like, she's telling her girlfriends, like, my boyfriend is Iron Fist, but don't tell anybody. And I think that is hilarious. And Scott's like, okay, Wolverine, as usual, jump to conclusions. Now everybody knows, yeah, this is clearly Wolverine's fault. He's like, but why you, Storm? She's like, Scott, you don't understand. I was hit with a bowl of soggy smelling. I've never felt so embarrassed. Gods, I wish I was dead. She realizes that she has totally been embarrassed, and that's the only reason that she flew off the handle, because she got hit with a face potato salad. I love it. It's so freaking funny.
Yeah, the last page is just an epilogue, basically showing what they're doing afterward. They're having some kind of party, looks like, in her crib that's still slightly damaged. And you get an argument, I'm trying to remember, with the apartment owner, I guess the you landlord. Could say. The landlord, and then, oh, out of nowhere, Danny Rand is he owns the building. So he basically tells him, like, oh, I'm Danny Rand, they need to do stutters just like I did. Find out, he says, I'll call the office tomorrow. He tells him he's going to get all the problems took care of, and sorry for any damages. Basically, Danny Rand's pulling a rich power move because he does own a lot of stuff.
He's pulling a Batman card.
Yes. And then all of a sudden, the last panel, the funniest panel, is where as soon as this happens, Jean turns around. She says, that's okay, Danny. As far as the heavy work's concerned, I already have a volunteer to take care of it. Don't I, Wolverine? And as soon as she says that, he smashes, I'm guessing, the beer can he's drinking and shoots it right on his face.
Yeah, because he knows he's screwed up.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to end this book. And to show how out of hand Wolverine got. Before they got there, he about had Colossus and Nightcrawler talk to him to kill him, this dude.
I don't know if you caught this, but at the top panel, we do see the couch has been destroyed right there by Wolverine where it's cut. So maybe when we seen the front of the couch on the throw, we didn't.
Yeah.
It looks undamaged on the front because Wolverine tore up the back of the couch. But the guys right there, the blonde guys with the hair and the beards on the left-hand side, that's Claremont and, like, them guys talking about stuff. They've been drawing themselves into the book, so.
That's really cool.
And I did find a note about this book. Apparently, Colossus' girlfriend at the time, Betsy Wilford, is apparently at the party, but she's not visible on any of the panels. So that's kind of weird. But because he showed up with Nightcrawler, he didn't show up with her. kind of a weird thing, though. But I like how you said this was a nice way to end this book. And really, it's a nice way to end this series because after this issue, the Iron Fist comic is canceled. This is the last issue of Volume 1. It gets canceled after this. Apparently, the sales were very poor and they couldn't establish continuing to publish the comic with such poor sales because Iron Fist apparently couldn't keep up the sales, which makes a lot of sense because after issue 10, we start really getting a lot of important Marvel characters show up in this book. We had the Wrecking Crew, who hadn't been around that long, but the Wrecker had been around for a long time. And that was a team up with Captain America. They reintroduced Boomerang as a villain in 13, even though 14, they introduced a completely new villain in Sabretooth. And then, which we have the X-Men in this book, which we know Claremont's writing, which is super popular at this time, almost in an attempt to save this book. But sadly, this book is canceled after this issue. And it being canceled, the two subplots, the major plots right now in the Iron Fist story, are left unanswered. We have the Steel Serpent Davos storyline, which we see in this book and the last book. It goes unanswered with a cancellation. And then we have the Misty Knight plot thread with Bushmaster, and that's left unanswered. Now, eventually they are, but fans were left, what happened? And none of us know at the time that this book was dropped because there was no continuation for the story. But overall, Evan, what'd you think about this issue? You're an X-Men guy. I had you come in for the X-Men. What'd you think about this story?
Well, the story was great. This is probably my favorite out of the ones that I have read out of all these issues. I just like it. I like the Iron Man one. But this one had a lot of comedy in it and a lot of feelings, basically Wolverine's feelings, and a lot of costume stuff. I like it a lot. This is my favorite issue of the batch. Also, this is probably one of my favorite single X-Men, I guess you could say, side comics that they've been in, especially at this time period.
Guest appearances.
It shows, the time period is really awesome because when you read this, you got to consider this is 1977. And to me, that is hilarious what they got to put in here in 1977.
And considering this is the new X-Men team and they've not really been around long at all, I think we're around issue like 108, 110 at this time. And they just formed this team in giant size, which the team started in 94. So, I mean, these characters barely have, just over 10 issues underneath their belt as an X-Men team.
Yeah, they don't have a whole lot of issues under their belt at the time, like you said. And then you get to see the different, from this point forward, which they get back into it because this got canceled, you get to see how powerful Iron Fist is and how much the X-Men need to learn. I think that's a really cool way to end it.
That is a really good thing to bring up with both those characters. And this story does a really good job of showing you how well Chris Claremont is at weaving plots. He took the two plots from his Iron Fist story, and then he took everything going on in the X-Men story and weaved them together around a misunderstanding about a party and made a really good one self-contained issue about it. And that just shows you how masterful he is at writing.
Yeah, very, very good.
So, but this episode's been long form. There's these two back-to-back Iron Fist episodes are really, really long form. So we don't want to drag it out anymore. But man, thanks for coming on. I'm glad we could actually get around to recording this before you started your big promotion. And congratulations, man. I'm very proud of you. Very happy for you for getting that.
Hopefully not the last time guesting on here. I'm sure we'll fit me in at some other point on any of these other podcasts.
So I'm going to have to get you on some Shang-Chi stuff because you've done Iron Fist twice now. So I'll have to get you on some Shang-Chi. And the next time if you cover Iron Fist, he'll be teamed up with Power Man. Luke Cage by that time, so you're technically be coming on if you do those and getting a new character to talk about. So but before we wrap everybody up, like I said, man, if you want more of the great, go check us out on Last Tavern on the left. He is currently not with us during the Where Death Dwells series Lars. He was really working hard, which led to this promotion that he just got back then. But he will be jumping in the Resident Evil campaign once it starts, about towards the end of that. He's in our Star Wars game. He's in the D&D small campaign I ran that we're going to release too. So you'll be getting a lot of him coming up in the future of that game. But if you want to go back to the beginning of Last Tavern, he ran that whole first campaign. And you'll get a taste of Evan's campaign and how he helped weave into what me, him, and Kyle created that's currently going on in our D&D podcast. But let everybody know where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EvanTheGreatTVD. I am more active on there than I have been, but I'm still not that active. I'm trying to get back into it. It's just hard.
And social media sucks.
I'll be honest with you, it sucks.
It's awful.
I love all my friends I've made on there. I love all my podcasting groups I've made on there. I still love and listen to as many of them as I can, but the actual media part of it sucks. But anyway, we ain't going to get into that. But yeah, so you can find me on there if you want to get on there, tag me, send me a message. I'll probably see it. I have an Instagram that I get on sometimes. I think it's just Evan the Great. That's mostly just my life outside of comics and fantasy stuff, but I do post some stuff, but most of that's my weight loss journey stuff. But so those are two places you could probably find me if you wanted to find me.
And you'll follow that tag on Twitter and Instagram, because I will tag him when the episode drops. But as for the Deadly Podcast, Kung Fu myself, you should be following me by now. I've dropped it here within the last 52 mm-hmm. episodes, so you should follow that. But remember, guys, in the end, support your favorite podcasts, support your local comic books, shops, and keep reading comics, guys. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.